This must-have classic is perfectly spiced and mixed for a quick lunch or easy dinner to go. Our special menus are back for the holiday and winter seasons. Visit jackandrea.com to order online.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning and welcome to Education Matters. My name is Mike Keough. I'm your host, one of your rotating hosts here. And the reason we started out with music, as we usually do not do, is because this episode of the program, we're going to be dealing with the jazz program at Kenosha Unified School District, and in particular, the concert that is coming up on November 11th. And so I'd like to introduce you to our guest, Jeremy Kreideman. Why don't you say hello, Jeremy, and tell the folks what it is that you do with Unified.
Hello. I am the band teacher at Lance Middle School, and I also help run or help put together and organize the nuts and bolts of the Kenosha Jazz Fest, the district-wide jazz fest that we have every year.
And Jeremy and I have known each other since 2004, I think.
Has it been that yeah. far back? Back at Ebsola, right?
We were at Edward Main School of Language and Art, and I was doing media production and media support and anything other they could think of. And my studio was right next to yours.
Yep.
And you stole some of my great technicians and...
That's right. Yeah, I was. That was my first year in Kenosha. That was a while ago.
And that was a fun year because that year for me it was a stressful and fun year because the media production person at the central office left, and so I did the choir fest, the orchestra fest, and the bandorama.
Yeah. That's a lot of work.
Using student crews. Primarily the kids from Ebsola, mm-hmm. but also some of the media kids that I had from Indian Trail and one kid from Salem Central. And they did a fine job. They did cover. They did all of the positions, camera work, everything but audio. Renwood fed us the audio.
Sure.
But that was fun. And obviously, I agree with Jeremy that music education is really important here in Kenosha, and in particular, we're both fond of jazz. Why don't you tell us something about the concert you've got coming up?
The Jazz Fest concert itself?
Right.
Well, every year we do, we have guest artist that comes in, usually a pretty big name. We've been drawing a lot heavily from California lately. Dave Storino, he is instrumental, and he's the guy that kind of funds it. He underwrites it for, through his business, Hanson Pool and Spas. But he is the guy who kind of brainchilded this about 10 years ago, I want to say, 10 or 11. I don't remember exactly when it started. I think they used to have it a number of years back, but then they went away for a while, and then he brought it back. And he gets the guys out here. We've had Andy Martin in the past. We've had Sal Lozano. We had Bones Malone. A bunch of different people. Fred Sturm was here from Lawrence University. And it's just, Dan Fornero, Kenosha alum. And he...
Steve Houghton.
Steve Houghton was 1 year, too. That's right, another Kenosha alum. And so Dave sets that up, gets the guys out here, and then the directors all have their jazz bands perform. We all do one song, and then the top high school groups at each of the three major high schools do a song with a guest artist, and then there's a faculty alumni band that's comprised of, well, faculty and alumni, and any of the clinicians that we have that work with the kids, and we do a few tunes with the guest artists as well, and it's just a really, really fun night. Usually sells out pretty fast, so it's kids get to play for a full house, and then during the day as well, they get to work with whoever the guest artist is. So Friday night, this year's guest artist being Gordon Goodwin, he's going to come and work with all the high school groups Friday night and practice with them and kind of clinic them. And then Saturday morning up until about like noon or so, he's going to work with the middle school bands. And then he'll put on a master class at 12:30, I think it is, until 1:30. And his master class this year is going to be really interesting. Usually it's kind of a the guest artist will play or have a combo, and then he'll answer questions, or sometimes they'll have kids up on the stage and they'll talk about improvisation or something. This year, Gordon's doing a clinic where he's going to talk to the kids about actually scoring for an animated feature. He's going to have a projector up and keyboard, and he's going to use different clips that he has, and he's going to show them how, you know, what the production end of music is, and as a career in music, like kind of things you can do that way. So it's going to be really exciting.
I've tried to attend everyone that I was aware of from the time that I became aware of this jazz program at Kenosha Unified, and they have all been good. And one of the things that impresses me is that obviously these guest artists get paid for coming here.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, they seem to thoroughly enjoy themselves. And they seem to be sincere when they're in front of the microphone and they're talking about the kids and talking to the kids. Has that been your experience? I would imagine it has been.
Yeah, you know, this would always. I'm not from Kenosha, and so not originally. I went to Whitewater High School, which was had a decent program, but we always kind of knew about the Kenosha program. It's a really, really strong program statewide. People kind of know about it. And so when you get these people that come in from the outside, outside of the state, guest artists for Bandorama or these guys that come in for Jazz Fest, they're always kind of blown away by just the sheer number of kids that are involved, and then also by the quality, by the level of proficiency that these kids have. And they're never prepared for the onslaught that they have to deal with, like the schedule. It's just like boom, 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 one band right after the other, and they go for hours. They go for hours. They get like 20 minutes to eat lunch. And then they go for hours again, and they just, they're exhausted. I it's kind of like running a marathon for all of us, or like I imagine I've never run a marathon, but you're tired at the end of it, but you're really glad you did it, and you don't really want to do it again anytime soon. So we do it every year instead of multiple times. But these guys come in, and they get kind of overwhelmed, and then they get real excited and energized by it, and then they talk really highly of it. And that's, I think, why we've gotten so many guys from the Gordon Goodwin band, because we got one guy out here, and then they go back and they tell the other guys about how great it was, and then we get the next guy come out, and pretty soon we'll have the whole band out here, I think, at some point.
Yeah, I'd wondered if maybe Sal Lozano came here because Andy Martin had such a good experience.
I think so. I think that certainly helped.
And so on. I really enjoyed Andy's Andy's involvement, particularly the towards the end with one of the all-star bands where you have sort of the proteges and from the students and
the faculty alumni band
and the faculty, and he was trading fours with a saxophone player, and they just went on and on and on, back and forth. And
I can't remember who that was. That might have been Dustin Lorenzi. He's a Kenosha alum. He plays it all over Chicago now, and I think he travels all over the country now, too. I'm not 100% sure, but he is a monster player and very well regarded. It could have been Eric Shore, who's also – he's kind of like the number one guy for jazz sax in Milwaukee, also Kenosha alum. And that's one of the best parts about it is these kids get to see other people that are from Kenosha that have played and gone on to perform. They get to see their teachers up there and playing in a real, like, quality ensemble, and that gets them excited. It's just a great night for everybody.
Well, that's one of the nice things about it is that you have the balcony reserved so that the students, after they perform, say the middle school students, after they perform with their band, they go upstairs and they watch the rest of the program, and they get to hear the faculty and alumni band and get energized even more than they are.
Yeah, very much. It's certainly one of, if not my favorite performance of the year. And my kids get, once they do it once, they get really, really excited about it and they look forward to it every year.
You've been teaching at the middle school level. And also, as a middle school teacher, you do outreach in the elementary schools as well, right?
Yep.
How do you can you give us some sort of a picture what it's like for someone who for kids who might find themselves with an attraction for jazz at the elementary level in the fifth grade, for example, and then what they experience in the middle school?
Well, when you start in fifth grade, what we do now is we try kids out in fourth grade on instruments. We don't try them out like as in an audition. Every kid that wants to play an instrument will play an instrument, but we kind of fit them on different instruments to see what is best fit for them physically or what they're most interested in. Kind of a nice marriage of those two things. And then as they play in fifth grade, when they actually start playing, we start to try to introduce them to professional artists on their instrument or other genres of music and get them kind of interested in that. And if a kid shows an interest in jazz, I can't speak for the other teachers, although I imagine it's very much the same. I start putting them towards recordings. I'm like, get on YouTube, you know, look up this person, look up this person. If it's a trombone player, look up J.J. Johnson. If it's a saxophone player, look up, you know, Charlie Parker, whoever. And start pushing them that way. And then I talk to them about jazz band. You know, look, if you want to, you know, sometimes I'll show them recordings of Jazz Fest, and I'll say, this is something you can do in a couple of years if you put the time in and you really start to buckle down and practice. And the best thing is just get them listening to the stuff, because if they listen to it, they start to develop a language with it, and then they can start to kind of do it.
Yeah, I suppose the availability of they wouldn't be exposed otherwise to this music, to this history of this music, because they wouldn't come across the recordings, because they aren't going to be looking for those kind of recordings on an MP3 player.
Not as often, no. Once in a while you get a kid whose parents are fans of jazz, and then they'll have a background in it. But there's a number of examples. I know I had a trombone player. He's in college now. He's probably in his third year of college now. And I had him over in fifth grade at Southport, and then I had him at Lincoln when I was teaching over there. And he's a trombone player. He's kind of interested in jazz a little bit. And then I gave him actually that album that you had out, that Kai Winding, J.J. Johnson album. And he listened to that. He threw that on his MP3 player and listened to it constantly, and ended up being a really monster player. So sometimes it's just introducing it to kids. Because you're right, they don't have, you know, when I do these jazz band rehearsals, kids are real great at rock. They're real great at Latin because they're straight eights. The music's, you know, straight eights, is not a swung eighth note. And that's what I spend the majority of my time on. I think most of the directors do, just trying to get them to understand swing eighth notes and how to swing music. It's not something you can quantify. It's not mathematically something you can actually write down. You can approximate it, but to get them to understand that language, they have to listen to it. And I'm kind of rambling here, but Russ Johnson, the jazz director at Parkside, he was our guest artist a couple of years ago, and he had a comment in his master class about the double-edged sword of YouTube. And he said, you know, it's really great that you have access to all this stuff. And he gave the example of one of his students came up to him and he had like a jump drive. And he said, I have every solo that Miles Davis ever played on this jump drive. And he looked at him and he said, yeah, but how many of them can you sing? You know, how many of them do you know well enough? So like these kids, they have access to all this stuff that I never had access to, that you never had access to growing up. But it's almost too much in some ways. So to get them not just to listen to it, but to listen to something intently and over and over and over and over again so that they can really understand it, that's the challenge. So gotta, you got to balance that out.
Yeah, and one of the things the modern circumstance has diminished is the concept of the album. People aren't buying albums, and they aren't exposed to albums. That's hurting the musicians because they make pennies on a on a download. And I think listening to an album is a special experience. The really good producers, the A&R guys, and the band directors would kind of literally put together an album for the disc or for the LP, where the music was all kind of related.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put on Bill Watrous or Stan Kenton or someone from a particular band from a particular era, you'd get you'd hear a spectrum of tunes that they do, and you'd get a better feel for it.
Mm-hmm. It's like a story.
Yeah, and particularly with jazz recordings, I like to play live recordings as opposed to studio recordings. Obviously, Kind of Blue album was not a live album, but I've got some live recordings of other people playing that tune. Jazz is a very interactive thing, and the audience is part of it, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you did, I mean, it's not complete unless you're sharing it. I think like any art.
Yeah, a lot of the energy from musicians, just like the energy from baseball players and football players, comes from those who are watching and listening.
Yep, that's what performance is. I mean, that's what makes Jazz Fest such a great night, because the kids, when they do the regular concerts at their schools, they have a good audience, but Jazz Fest is drawing from all the different schools' audiences. You know, the kids that come to, say, my middle school at Lance, or the people that come to watch it, most of them are the families of the kids. At Jazz Fest, my students get watched by parent families, members, and audience members from all across the city, and that's true of every band that performs that night. So they're it's just a different experience, and everyone's real supportive, and they cheer for everybody, and it's just really great.
And there's so many people in Kenosha who just support music and enjoy the music and are literate with the music that show up for those, and so it's not just an audience of parents and people feel they have to be there.
Correct. And when you get an artist like Gordon Goodwin, who's got a national name, then you get all kinds of people from different, and it's great for the district. It's great PR for the district, and it shows people that may not have kids in the program how good this program really is.
What about that venue out there at Indian Trail?
Oh, that's a nice auditorium. Yep, it's really nice.
It's a beautiful auditorium. It's tuned. The sound system is built into the walls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly how it's mic'd, but you almost don't need mics on stage for a lot of kinds of performances.
It depends, but yeah, we like to mic the saxophones, but you don't need a whole lot else. It's a really great place to play, and the kids get a chance to perform there.
And the area behind the stage, well, there's a stagecraft area for a theatrical performance. Mm-hmm. Isn't that on a lower level, and there's an elevator?
I think so. Yeah, I'm not super familiar with the back, you know, under the stage and backstage stuff. But yeah, the auditorium is wonderful.
There's a practice room for the bands in the back. There's a separate one for orchestra and concerts.
Mm-hmm.
But the one for the band, you could use that as a dirigible hangar.
Yeah, they're pretty large, and you want nice high ceilings. Otherwise, especially with loud groups, your hearing starts to deteriorate after a while.
But there's not a bad seat in the place.
No.
And the acoustics are terrific. It's so comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
The chairs are so comfortable.
Yeah, we use that for overflow seating for Bandorama every year. When Bandorama sells out, you can get a slightly reduced price ticket over and sit in the auditorium. And there's live feed from the same media teams that you were talking about earlier. And I if I wasn't a director, I'd want to sit in there because they're way more comfortable than the bleachers.
Jumping back and forth, you're a little bit going back to middle school, because I both of us are still involved in middle schools. But I'm impressed with how early the commitment to music develops, because those kids are coming to school early. mm-hmm. and very often they're practicing late. And every time in the morning as I'm walking in, I'm hearing several days a week, I'm hearing bands practice. And in particular, with this concert coming up, I'm hearing our jazz band. And to some extent, it must be frustrating because not everybody's on the same level, and maybe somebody is really ready to move ahead and energetic with the piece, and the rhythm section maybe not up to it, or vice versa. But I guess what I'm getting at is the progress of a middle school band over those middle school years. How much it improves, because I'm hearing now some very good trumpet work coming from that room. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be anxious to see those kids, mm-hmm. but they have such dedication at such a young age to come in.
Oh yeah, and I mean every school is a little different as far as like how the directors run the rehearsals. I rehearse nearly every morning, and those kids are coming in 7:30 to 8:30 every day. I mean school. I believe the middle school day starts at 8:10, but the kids get in at about 8:30, and I have kids in the room coming in there and rehearsing, not just with me, but with specialists that I bring in, and I know the other middle schools do too. You're referring to the Bullen Middle School jazz yep. band with Katie Poole, and she does a great job over there. She actually also helps organize this event and handles. She's been handling the faculty, alumni, band personnel, you know, we all do something a little different. But yeah, those kids, they're super dedicated, and I always point that out at concerts too. When I talk to parents, you know, these are kids that are really going the extra mile. And not just that, they're also doing National Honor Society, they're doing sports, they're doing different other clubs and different, you know, foreign languages and stuff too.
Yeah, it is a motivator. It's something that brings them to a higher level in terms of their social development, I think. Mm-hmm. Music, theater, or the kinds of things I was doing with media production, athletics, mm-hmm. they all serve to be character building and adjusting to living in a world with other people. Mm-hmm. It's more valuable than a lot of people who aren't involved with music might realize, I guess.
One of the things when I talk to parents about the benefits of music education that I always point out is sometimes you hear them called soft skills. You know, I tell them that the skills that they're learning in an ensemble are things that they're going to be able – that are going to enhance their regular core curriculum, and they're going to be skills that are going to help them when they're in the real world getting jobs, when they're working, interviews even, anything like that. You know, they're learning leadership. They're learning teamwork. They're learning how to communicate with each other. They're learning how to work together. But more importantly, they're learning perseverance. You know, there aren't a lot of things anymore for kids that I see where they have to try and fail and try and fail and try and fail a whole lot before they succeed. And music is definitely one of those things where they have to stick to it and see it through. And kids that play instruments more than a lot of different things, I think they really show that. They have to. And they love it, and it's what a great medium for them to be able to do that, you know, and to be able to put something out there for people to listen to.
Yeah, it's such an opportunity that we have here, and the other value that I think it has is life enrichment later mm-hmm. on.
That, absolutely, that too.
I know a person who is blind and talking to him once, this was some time ago, and he said, "Well, I'm glad I lost my eyes instead of my hearing."
Yeah, well, I would feel the same way.
I still have music.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should play a little bit of Gordon Goodwin here in the middle of the program. We'll play a part of a tune called Mama Llama Samba. It's none of the tunes on this disc are less than 10 minutes, which is characteristic of Gordon Goodwin's band.
Yeah.
This is not his band. It's Bill Watrous's West Coast Wildlife Refuge. But Goodwin did a lot of arranging for them and some playing with them. And so I have this album, and let's play this now. Thank you. Okay. Gordon Goodwin and his big band from California. And as I say, that was a long, very long recording. And we had to cut out because of time limitations here before we got to Bill Watrous's solo. But Jeremy's a trombone player, and I've always wanted to play the trombone.
But never too late.
Never too. I suppose it's never too late. In connection with the elementary work you did in the recruiting, I used to get, when I was a substitute teacher, I used to get called to sub in music classes, and a lot of teachers wouldn't take those because they wouldn't think that they would be able to do anything. And I couldn't figure out why they were calling and asking for me. And turned out, if you've seen how they teach violin,
mm-hmm.
They have those cotton. They don't have don't use full strings. They have cotton extenders on the strings,
okay.
And so the violins are constantly getting out of tune. And since I had a mandolin, I knew how to tune a violin. So. One of those teachers was impressed with the fact that the kids were able to continue to practice when their violins got out of tune every 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And the word got around. But I really enjoyed doing it, and mm-hmm. Particularly at the middle school level, the orchestra bands, some of those bands were really quite good. And usually if you were getting an eighth grade group or something like that as a substitute, there would be somebody who would be sort of a concert master,
mm-hmm.
somebody who was a leader of the group and could come to take over. And when they had a sub, they would play things that they really liked to play.
Sure.
Instead of what they were forced to play, which gets me to the question of how do you choose the music that you expose your students to as far as them playing it?
Well, there's a few things you got to think about. Mostly, you've got to think about what skills you're trying to teach them. I mean, if you're trying to teach them, say you have a goal, and we have curriculum and standards that we want to, you know, certain things that we want the kids to understand by a certain grade. So by high school, they have to learn X number of major scales and, you know, different time signatures, be able to play in different keys. So I try to pick music, and I think we all try to pick music that hit those criteria, those goals. And then we also have to reference it with what's a quality piece of music. What is considered a good arrangement? A lot of times we'll get arrangements of orchestral pieces, because up until, I don't know, not that long ago, not a whole lot of people were writing. There was a kind of a lack of good quality band literature at a middle school level, for sure. At the high school level, there was tons of it, but at middle school level, there was a real lack of good literature. And in recent years, they've started to really change that. But you get these different arrangements of the same song. Some are good and some are not great. And then you've got to think about your instrumentation. If you've got a really good trumpet section, you know, you can pick a piece that has great trumpets, but if that same piece has a really insane flute part and your flute section's still kind of stumbling around and you need to get up to speed, that's not a tune you can pick. So you have to fit the band, you have to hit the criteria for the standards in the curriculum, and you have to make sure that it's enjoyable for the kids, and it's got to be something good that the audience is going to want to listen to too. There's a lot of things to think about. I don't know how other people pick. As you go along, you sort of develop, you know, your favorites that you go back to every so many years. But I like to try to cycle in new rep a lot of times, and so I'll get on a website that sells music and they have recordings, and I'll listen to the first 10 seconds of a whole lot of songs, and if I can get past the first 30 seconds, then I put it on a long list, and then I whittle and I let it sit for a while, and I check the criteria that I was talking about. You know, is it hitting these areas that I want it to hit? And then I'll kind of whittle it down to a short list. And then my last criteria is, can I stand to listen to it for, you know, every day for a week? And if I'm not sick of it by the end of that week, I figure the kids won't be sick of it either, and it ends it up in the concert. But yeah, there's lots of things to think about.
Anything different that you think about when concert like this comes up, because every middle school band, as I understand it, gets to play one tune.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was actually just talking to Ken Wheely over at Indian Trail about this. We were he used to kind of run everything for this, along with Scott Plank, the fine arts director, who, to be fair, is the guy that kind of runs everything in Kenosha. Ken's gotten so busy over at Indian Trail, he's actually asked Katie Poole and I to kind of take over. And I was talking to him about the big band tunes, because I was having a really hard time trying to decide what faculty band tunes we wanted to do. And we're going to end up doing this piece by Gordon Goodwin called Everlasting, which is a ballad. And I said, well, you know, I love ballads and Ken loves ballads, but I said, I'm concerned it's a little on the slow side. And I'm not sure that, you know, the kids are going to be super attentive to that. And he said, no, I said, every single band goes out and plays one song. And everybody picks like a really up-tempo, fast, kind of like exciting piece. It'll be nice to actually just take a breath and slow down and have the audience kind of relax at that point. So that's what we're going to go with. But yeah, people tend to, they get one song, you get one shot, you kind of want to pick your most impressive thing, you know, and really get people pumped up.
The high school bands get to play more than one tune.
I can't remember. I know that the highest level group at each Bradford and Tremper and Indian Trail, they all get to do a tune with Gordon Goodwin. They may do a single song besides that. I know they used to do two songs. I'm not sure they do anymore.
That's right. Some of the schools have more than one.
Yep. All the high schools have at least two.
Okay. And what tunes are you planning on playing for the
faculty band?
Yeah, the faculty band.
Well, the two tunes we're going to play with Gordon are a tune called Everlasting. That's a ballad. He's going to play piano on that. And then he's going to play tenor sax, because he's equally proficient on both. He's going to play tenor sax on the last tune we're going to do is a tune called Act Your Age that he wrote. Both are songs that he's composed. And then we always do a song before we introduce the guest artist is just the faculty band. We usually try to pick like a big band standard, usually something from the Basie or Ellington catalog. This year, with the passing of Tim Bell, who was, you know, I don't know if he was an emeritus of Parkside, but he was Parkside jazz director for a really long time, former member of the 1 o'clock band in North Texas, a monster player. I didn't know Tim super well. I met him a few times, but I knew his reputation. And he was a monster player. And he was a really, really great educator. And with him passing, he was actually supposed to play in this band on the 11th. And with him passing, we decided it would be appropriate to pick a song that he loved and to sort of dedicate it to him. So we asked Jack Plavonic, who's the director of the Parkside Reunion Big Band and was a good friend of Tim's, to pick a song that he liked. And we're going to do It Could Happen to You, one of Tim's favorites, and that's going to open it up.
You know, with respect to Tim Bell, I didn't know him well either. I don't think I was ever introduced to him, although he was one of the hosts here at WGTD for our Saturday night of jazz that we do. And so I certainly got to listen to him. It was sort of a one-sided conversation, and saw him many times without ever having a chance to talk to him. But from the comments that I would hear from him when he was talking about a show or when he was actually talking on the show and so on, the loss of Tim is somewhat compensated by the thought that that he died doing what he loved doing, in that his life had been exactly what he wanted it to be professionally. He got to spend his entire life in music, his entire adult life in music. He used to say that it was a good thing that he got married, because otherwise he would still be a student at North Texas State, because he loved the program so much, and he just loved playing with the student bands. He's thought of that as the highest point of his life. And then the Parkside opportunity came along, and he had an opportunity to extend it for the rest of his life.
What I understand is that he made that Parkside jazz program phenomenal, and that was a huge boon to Kenosha's already really well-established and burgeoning music program. And he's definitely seems to be I'm not a Kenosha native, but he definitely seems to be woven into the fabric of the city's music history.
I have a question that's been on my mind for I don't know how long. And I don't know why I've never asked it in a context like this, but how much do the high school and college music programs, jazz music programs that we have today, how much do they owe to Stan Kenton?
That is a conversation for someone's doctoral thesis. I would think a lot. I mean, I don't even know how to begin to answer that question. Stan Kenton was such a huge influence on everything. You know, it's just one of the pieces and one of the bricks in the wall of big band history.
Yeah, the jazz and programs, for the most part, are built around bands, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so many of the modern groups that are still existing in the field of jazz are large groups that come together for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then disappear, and they all seem to play a lot of Kenton-esque music. But his spectrum was so broad. But think back at my collection of Kenton records. My favorites are records that he made recordings at different colleges, and they would do the recordings that would be made like your event on the 11th after. Several days of doing clinics with students from those schools, and it just seemed to me that you probably had a pretty large effect in making jazz education something that was respectable enough that it's been adopted.
Well, yeah, it's interesting you say that, because you, a number of years ago, you gave me a double CD live recording of a Kenton show that I want to say it was at Carthage. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Yep, and that album had such a wide variety of tracks on it. I mean, one track they're playing Malaguena, another track they're playing The Peanut Vendor, and then another track they're playing Live or Let Die from the James Bond movies. And now to hear you say that, it makes sense, because, you know, you listen to any middle school or high school jazz concert, and you're going to have a really wide variety of genres represented, and you'll hear a really wide variety of genres at Jazz Fest on November 11th, and you almost have to have that. And it sort of prognosticates the YouTube thing we were talking about. I mean, it's almost like Stan Kenton could see the future as far as with these kids getting pulled in all these different directions. They have so much access to different things. That's how you get kids interested. You appeal to all, you know, a very broad range, and that was true back in the 60s and 70s with Kenton, and it's true now.
And he was always a touring band, which made him accessible to a lot of people in colleges and in communities, and a lot of people could hear him live, not just on recordings. And that must have been difficult to hold a band together doing that. But he relied very heavily on younger musicians, but he had this cadre of older guys that kind of held him together. I remember that that concert in Kenosha. I attended it. I didn't realize they were coming to town until the last minute, and I saw this these two buses coming down 52nd Street from the highway, you know, the big Greyhound buses that had the second level in the back, the Strato Cruisers or whatever they called them, and in the box on the top where it listed destination, it said nowhere. And then when they passed, then I saw a Stan Kenton Orchestra on the side of the bus, and so found out that where they were playing, and it was a wonderful concert, and that apparently was a pirate recording.
Yeah, that's what you told me.
That was eventually somebody eventually cleared up the copyrights to it and got it on the air. I think, but it's an example of how Kenosha is attuned to music, because we had Woody Herman here once at at St. Joe's, if I recall correctly. And, well, our proximity to Summerfest is probably an advantage to us.
Yeah, you know, Kenosha's geographical situation, I think, lends itself to from what I've heard. I used to sit and chat with Emil Pacetti, who used to own Pacetti's Music Downtown a lot. He and I would talk, and he told me that, you know, with Chicago being just to the south and Milwaukee being just to the north, these bands would come through, and they would stop at Kenosha to get an extra gig in on the way, one way or the other. And when I was teaching at Lincoln, there was a lady that worked there as was an excellent teacher, and she told me that, you know, these bands like Ellington's band, Basie's band, they would stay in town sometimes, and they would their sections would get invited to dinner at different people's houses. And so when she was a little girl, that the Ellington saxophone section would just have dinner at her house. It just kind of lends itself to Kenosha's history as a music town, having LeBlanc here and the brass factories and all the instruments that were made here. I remember Emil telling me that Vito LeBlanc would have Maynard Ferguson down here. He'd have different jazz musicians from all over the place come to Kenosha, and they'd bring him in, and we're still feeling the effects of that today, I think.
Okay, well, we'll have to end it because we're just getting to about a minute or so, which is probably time enough for you to tell them a number to call if they want to reserve a ticket, because there may not be tickets available at the door, and we're saying that honestly because it was sold out last year.
Yeah, it sells out every year, and I think this year is going to be it's going to go even quicker. Well, the website you want to go to for sure is kusd.edu/fineArts. You can buy tickets there. You could also call 359-6388, and that's the Fine Arts Department number, and you can get tickets that way. But if you go online, there'll actually be a map. Like most places, you can actually see where in the auditorium your seat is.
Okay, and with that, we'll wrap it up here. My guest has been Jeremy Creedman. My name is Mike Kehoe. I'm one of the alternating hosts here. If you know of someone who would like to have heard this program, or you want to hear it again, you can go to our website, or you can go to the WGTD.edu site, and you can click on shows, and then you can go